what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
Uh-uh, we got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
An oppressed person will fight back.
True for faith.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Good evening, Toronto. You're listening to Radio Basics, January 5th, 2009. Happy New Year's to our listeners out there, to the extent that that's possible. Some crazy things going on in the world today. We got the bombardment and the invasion of Gaza, Palestine. We're going to be talking about that today here on Radio Basics. We're also going to be playing a very short radio documentary that was recorded today regarding QP3903 and the ongoing strike. Currently, there's a sit-in going on in the outside President Mamdouz Choukri's office up on the 9th floor of Ross Building. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. We're going to be talking about Gaza. We're going to be playing some local, some progressive music, as we always do here on Radio Basics. We'll have some community announcements. We're going to go to a track, and we'll be right back.
Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. Revolution is not an abstraction. It is not some far out, far fetched, far away thing that other people do. Dead sleep, asleep, dead. Walking through life, the living walk dead in order to make it through to the night. Lying to common sense, hands outstretched, awaiting the outcome of fate. But fate is not an abstraction. It is a direct result of actions taken when one refuses to choose to do nothing with life. Dead sleep, asleep, dead walking through life, the living walk dead in order to make it through to the end of the night. Willing problems to disappear, willing change to erect itself without pursuing the resurrection of self. Picking up arms, militant, ready to fight, while the biggest arm to a weapon remains unharnessed, unnurtured, untrained. The mind left behind by fake attitudes and unreal realism. Fighting the isms and schisms becomes the only mission, forgetting that when they live within, they can never end on the outside. Revolution starts in the mind. Submission of will power inevitably results. Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. But still and still, dead sleep, asleep, dead walking through life, the living walk dead, oblivious to strife, for conspiring to convince themselves to compromise, creating, nurturing, depending on their own set of lies to get through to the end of the night. Dead asleep, asleep, dead walking through life, the living walk dead. Numb to the pain in the world, numb to the changes needing to be implemented, oblivious to what occurs past their nose and anything else that's not directly under their toes. Life is money, money is time, and hell sips red, red wine, a sweet syrupy aperitif, and the living pass, homeless on the street, hold their breath so as not to catch a whiff of the reality of insensitivity, dirt, filth, urine on clothes, poverty without pretense. Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. Real evolution will not be covered, packaged, or broadcast. And lies are real evolution. True revolution begins on the inside. Dead sleep, asleep, but dead walking through life, the living walk dead, consumed by their existence, buying into the selfishness of independence, waiting for revolution, waiting for revolution, waiting for it to come. But what will we do then? If now we sleepwalk through this creation, walk dead through chances for salvation, refuse to stand up for this nation, how will we will revolution to come when on the inside anger, hatred, and pain resides, leaving no room for prospects to loom overhead, ahead, over heels, in love with fallacies? Abstract revolution will never manifest into reality.
What's up, people? It's Corey with Basics Radio. That was a track from Naila from her 2001 album, Freedom. We're going to go now to the radio documentary, Brief 5 Minutes on the ongoing QP 3903 strike, which is setting the precedent for the other contracts coming up at universities across Ontario for TAs.
It's been 61 days and counting since York University's classes were suspended due to an ongoing labor dispute with its university workers. QP Local 3903, representing graduate assistants, contract faculty, and teaching assistants, went on strike on November 5th, 2008, after 4 months of negotiating with the administration had only led to a deal that would have resulted in an overall loss of real wages and benefits for union members. The union strongly rejected the university's concessionary offer on November 5th, 2008, and have since been demanding that they will not return to work until their demands have been seriously considered and satisfied. Among the demands being made by QP 3903 include job security for contract faculty and an improvement of wages, benefits, and funds for other members. This morning, Monday, January 5th, when students would have normally been returning to school for the beginning of their second term, QP 3903 held a 9 a.m. rally at the main gate of York University, at which it was highlighted that similar struggles are being waged all around the world, from Greece to New York to Toronto, and everywhere the principal enemy is neoliberalism and capitalism. Everywhere, students are fighting rising tuition fees, precarious employment, campus repression, not to mention the many other ways in which the state is currently using the economic situation as a pretext to attack working people. After the rally, over 100 students marched to the office of York University's president, Mamdou Choukri, to participate in the sit-in, refusing to leave the building until Choukri agrees to participate in a public forum to openly discuss with the public the nature of the strike and to answer questions from the public and from union members. The flying squad of QP 3903 also held down the sit-in 24 hours a day in the week leading up to the holiday break and have vowed to continue the sit-in until President Choukri meets their demands or until the strike is over. I visited the site of the sit-in to catch up with some of the union members and supporters, and this is what they had to say.
Well, basically we're here because we want to talk to Choukri. And me, as an undergraduate student, I would only know what he looks like because I've seen him in the paper. Why haven't the administration been present when we had a forum to speak to, say, the QP members, right? QP members showed up to the YFS town hall. QP members went on CP24. They've been very upfront, and I just think that the administration, like, hides behind their, I don't know, online. They're like,
I think Choukri is a fictional character. He doesn't exist.
I've been here since about 4:30 yesterday. And then I was here for most of the time as the last round of the sit-in as well.
The sit-in's been going really interestingly, and now that we're back, like, I feel like there's a somewhat different dynamic just because we're in a whole different situation and context. You know, we have bargaining resuming, we have different issues that have come up, and we have the media situation is very different. People, students want to get back to classes, and, you know, they're wondering why they're not back to classes, and so we're in this kind of different situation, and so it's kind of exciting to see where the sit-in is going from here. And I still think our main message and our main concerns are relevant. Like, why is the administration not being held accountable to its community and to its students? Why is it not communicating to its students? You know, why isn't President Choukri coming and attending town halls and having a public forum in which we can reconcile differences and divisions within our community? So I think those concerns are still very relevant, even as so much has changed over the past 2 weeks.
Well, the mainstream media has not been supportive of this whatsoever. It's easy to villainize unions, and they have done so for QP 3903 especially. I'm here as an undergraduate in support of the union. Because although it is easy to villainize the unions are the reasons that we have the benefits that we do have, whether you are working for a university or you're working for a different kind of employer. Job security, fair wages, these are things we all deserve. And I appreciate a union who will stand up for its members.
Those were sound bites from the sit-in that's currently going on outside the office of President Mamdou Choukri, York University president. The sit-in being organized by the flying squad of QP 3903 are currently demanding that President Choukri meet at a public forum and answer questions from from strikers, from union members, and from the public over the strike. The university has lacked transparency on their positions around the strike, other than their internet and email communiques that they've been sending out. A lot of people are really in the dark around what position the university really has, and how they've been responding to the various issues being put forward by QP3903. We're going to go to a commercial break. We're going to be coming back talking about the situation in Gaza with an organizer here in Toronto from the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid. We'll be back. Radio Basic, CHRY 105.5.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change? Good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction would cause an effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain, makes you forgive and forget, makes you change.
That was Tracy Chapman, Change, from her 2005 album, Where You Live. I know there's some Tracy Chapman fans out there, since her self-titled album in 1988 was talking about a revolution. Tracy Chapman, way to go. We love you. So we're going to turn it over to Kabir and our guest, Dan Freeman Malloy, from the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, to talk about the horrible situation in Gaza right now. Kabir.
Thanks, Corey. And welcome back to Radio Basics on CHRY 105.5 FM. Since December 27th, Israel has carried out an unrelenting slaughter in Gaza, a massive and violent assault on the 1.5 million Palestinians crowded into the 360 square kilometer strip, an attack which has killed 548 people and wounded over 2,400 in just 10 days. The so-called military targets have included Gaza's Islamic University, mosques, hospitals, roads, and hundreds of civilian homes and refugee camps, coupled with a almost complete cutoff of food and medicine and closure of all crossings. In addition to this, ambulances and rescue teams trying to save wounded civilians are targeted by Israeli warplanes. 2 nights ago, the Israeli massacre, codenamed Operation Cast Lead, was extended to include a ground invasion along with a brutal air raid, so that Gaza is now under attack from air, land, and sea. Despite the scale and horror of the crimes being unleashed on Palestinians, the vast majority of world leaders, including President-elect Obama and the corrupt Arab officials of neighboring countries, have refused to condemn the atrocities, while Canada and the U.S. are not only complacent but complicit in the genocide by militarily and financially supporting the Israeli state. The vast majority of the world's population, by contrast, has been horrified by the slaughter, and masses of outraged people have demonstrated across North and South America, Europe, Asia, and the Middle East, including 10,000 people here in Toronto last Saturday. Here to discuss the massacre Israel is conducting in Gaza and how crucial international solidarity in support of Palestinians is at this tragic time is Dan Freeman Malloy. Dan is a well-known Toronto activist and writer who has written, spoken, and led actions around the occupation and ethnic cleansing of Palestine. He joins us on the line from here in Toronto. Hey, Dan, and thanks so much for coming on today.
Hi, thanks for doing this.
Definitely. So to start off, what's the latest report right now from Gaza, 9 days after the initial air raids and 3 days after the tank invasion?
Well, I haven't been following hour-to-hour military reports too closely. It's a very odd time, too. Israel has long prohibited Israeli journalists on an independent basis from reporting from the Gaza Strip. But they've gone beyond that in this instance, and Israeli journalists aren't even embedded with Israeli forces, which is the usual model. So there's been a real effort to manage the public relations coming out, again, to the point of even very war-eager Israeli journalists not tagging along as they usually do. Despite rulings by the Supreme Court, foreign journalists are still being excluded, and we've seen continuously the targeting of media outlets in Gaza, all of which is to say detailed information is somewhat hard to come by. Reports indicate that in addition to naval bombardment, continuous airstrikes, artillery attacks, and ground forces, both tanks and infantry operating, there has also been the use of white phosphorus, which is sort of an air to napalm, which they sometimes claim is used to just blind people as they go after them, but is also a very vicious anti-personnel weapon. So it's difficult to know exactly how this is going to unfold. It's worth recalling the context a little bit.
Yes.
Israel wasn't forced militarily out in 2005 with the disengagement. The notion was Israel would continue to terrorize the population of Gaza by artillery, by airstrikes, etc., but wanted to sort of abdicate responsibility for the 1.5 million people living there, and so decided to rule from the borders. If what they're trying to do is reoccupy Gaza militarily, there are not supply lines to any Palestinian resistance factions, to Hamas or others. that can realistically allow them to fully prevent Israel if Israel is willing to go in and just massacre and retake the Strip.
And military reoccupy the country. So, Dan, sorry to interrupt.
Not at all.
But so the corporate media has put forward, just to put some direct kind of recent historical context to it, the corporate media has put forward this lie that Hamas provoked the invasion by firing rockets into Israel. But coverage has completely ignored the fact that the indirect killing of Palestinians in Gaza by Israel through its siege of the territory that has been in place since June of 2007, long before any rocket attacks, and which saw the Zionist state not letting in any food, fuel, medicine, or even Palestinian tax dollars. So can you talk about the real context to this invasion and the reality of who broke the so-called Israeli-Hamas truce?
Certainly. As you say, it's not just a mistake to pretend that this is a two-sided conflict, or let alone that Israel is retaliating, but that's a crucial alibi for ongoing massacres that are being committed, and it really is a bankrupt idea that this is Israeli retaliation or that this is some symmetrical conflict. In terms of the question of retaliation, provocation, you can look at it sort of in three different time frames. If you want to really go back, it's worth recalling that when people talk about Palestinians firing rockets at Ashkelon, Ashkelon used to be a Palestinian city. This is Israel is territory from which the bulk of the Palestinian population in Gaza was expelled to be confined in Gaza. Okay, more recently, what we've seen is particularly with this truce, Israel has the capacity to elicit responses. So it's openly acknowledged in the Israeli press, for example, that the incursion in early November of Israeli forces was designed to precipitate a Palestinian response. And then already we've seen for months and months planning for these assaults taking place. During the truce, after the truce, I mean, it was a fake truce because they kept an embargo on, but at all points, the position of Hamas, setting aside what one thinks of the rockets, has been that the rockets will stop if the crossings that will allow Palestinians not to starve will be opened. And then Hamas has also been working for a broadened ceasefire, including the West Bank. But again, the idea that this is just Palestinian provocation and Israeli response is entirely bankrupt. Israel is controlling the pace and direction of a massive campaign of collective punishment and massacre, and that cannot be let go of.
Definitely. And of course, another major fact is the right of Palestinians to resist against Israel. In fact, UN Special Rapporteur John Dugard has himself conceded that Hamas had the right to fight back against the sanctions regime of Israel, never mind against the current slaughter that's taking place. And it's interesting to note that back in 1967, when Israel's excuse for continuing to occupy Gaza and the West Bank was actually that it was under a sanctions regime imposed by the then anti-Zionist Egypt.
Yes, well, it's worth recalling that until this ground invasion in particular, there had been a week of massacring where there was not combat as such. I mean, the rockets are one thing, but we're talking in terms of the slaughter of people, about airstrikes where there's no real way to engage with the Israeli Air Force as lightly armed groupings. So this was a one-sided slaughter. When Palestinians have been dying at a ratio of about 100 Palestinian fatalities to each Israeli death. Now, one can lament attacks on rocket attacks, which for lack of precision aren't hitting military targets, but just wherever they happen to be hitting. But again, this is the fundamental thing that we're seeing is a one-sided massacre against a largely defenseless civilian population.
Yes. And as in all of its invasions and occupations, Israel has effectively used Arab and Palestinian collaborators. Can you discuss the support Israel has received from Egypt's dictatorship as well as from Mahmoud Abbas and the implications for Egyptians and Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestinians in the West Bank in particular, whose demonstrations against the massacre in Gaza have already been fired at with deadly force by Israeli occupation forces?
I mean, everything you're saying is true. The Egyptian regime has certainly been stunningly complicit, and there is a lot of regional anger about that. Also, it's certainly true that the Abu Mazen presidency, the president of Mahmoud Abbas, the presidency of Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank, has been orchestrating some terrible repression, and its diplomacy has been quite shameful. But I think what we really can't lose sight of is what we can affect. Palestinians are, with quite a bit of courage, seeking to sort of reconstitute the national movement in different ways, and I don't want to comment on that too much. Also, regionally, there is an outpouring of anger, which we can only hope will intensify and become quite organized. But I think what we really need to focus on is the major problem, which is the bankrupt politics around this issue in so much of North America and Europe. What we're seeing right now from the European Union and from the United States is the sort of diplomatic maneuvers that are providing cover for these ongoing atrocities. Canada's a little less important, but no less bad, in as much as we have influence, we're exerting it in the same direction. So what we really are needing is for the continued resistance we're seeing from Palestinians, and also the solidarity that we are seeing emerge in other areas of the Arab world against the corrupt regimes you're describing, to find parallel in the societies of Europe and North America, where people aren't facing live rounds of ammunition fired at them, but are in a position to, in a very vigorous way, take on officials who are complicit in these processes. And it's across the board. The NDP has been extremely weak on this question, mm-hmm. failing to issue anything but a tepid statement regarding sort of escalation on both sides. And meanwhile, the Harper government and presumably at this point the Ignatieff Liberals seem like they're mostly just maneuvering to try to be more pro-Israel than Harper. I haven't seen much from the Liberals, but in any case, we know that across the board, Canadian politics have deteriorated here, and figuring out how, in Europe, in North America, to forge a sort of unified resistance to bring our officials to bear is what I think we need to focus on.
Definitely, and in fact, you wrote an article and said that recently that discussed, among other things, the importance of, in terms of international pressure on Israel. This is coming from the Israeli generals that are leading up this massacre themselves, and the restrictions, or of course in this case the non-restrictions, it puts on Israel's ability, the window it provides Israel to attack Palestinians. So can you talk a little bit more about this in the context of the importance of international solidarity with Palestine, as well as the importance of independent media in exposing Israeli crimes?
Yeah, well, one thing that I mentioned is that I mentioned the description that mm-hmm. the chief of staff of the United Nations Truth Supervision Organization, a Canadian, was sent in the 50s. In any case, without going into specifics, just a professional Canadian soldier. And he was on record in the 50s saying, look, Gaza is not particularly viable. We're talking about a population predominantly of refugees, 350,000 people confined in this small space. Now it's 1.5 million people, and projections are that in 12 years it's going to be 2.5 million people. Mm-hmm. Nobody, no Israeli planner, nobody who's looking at the situation thinks this situation can stand. It simply cannot. And what we're seeing is one episode of many ugly episodes of trying to deal with this in the coming years. The model they're adopting is essentially genocidal. They're saying that people there should be completely unarmed, subject to continuous military assault, and frankly, they're going to just go in and kill as many people and arrest as many people as the military situation and the diplomatic situation will permit. We can't affect the military situation, and unfortunately, it's going to be very difficult for. I mean, we'll see how the military situation unfolds. That's not us. The one thing that we can affect is the diplomatic situation, and we need to just really understand that to the extent that the diplomatic and the international community allows massacres to take place, they will take place because this isn't a viable situation and Israel is looking to control it through massive organized violence. Now, what we can do in Canada, in Europe, I mean, in connection with people in the U.S., where, of course, this is quite crucial, and as you say, the sort of nascent Obama presidency is keeping very quiet, saying mm-hmm. only one president at a time on the question of slaughter in Gaza, but I'm happy to talk about the economy or whatever else. Mm-hmm. That's a very important question, but I really think we have to focus as much as we can on that, and also make sure that we don't repeat this pattern where only when dozens or hundreds of Palestinians are being massacred do we see the logic of this process. This is unfolding day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, and it's precisely sustaining the justifiable and necessary rage that people see during these particularly pronounced moments of massacre. We need to sustain that rage and direct it in the coming period, or else this pattern is just going to keep repeating itself.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in terms of the objectives of this assault that the intentions are essentially genocidal in terms of eliminating Gaza, the Palestinians of Gaza, as a viable population. What do you think of the recent comments by, for example, John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., about, you know, suggesting they put Gaza under the tutelage of Egypt, or essentially let it become absorbed into the Egyptian territory and let the West Bank go under the control of Jordan. And in fact, this strategy was not only came out in these recent comments, but was actually suggested by the U.N. Special Rapporteur as well, or sorry, the U.N. Human Rights Investigator delegator to the Palestinian territories, Richard Falk, who also suggested that this is the ultimate objective Israel has in mind in terms of essentially just eliminating Gaza as a Palestinian territory.
Right. Well, there's a lot of stuff you have in there. Certainly, there for a long time has been people often used to talk in Israel of the Jordanian option. What they really meant usually was that Jordan is the Palestinian state because there are so many Palestinian refugees in Jordan that we can just call Jordan the Palestinian state and be done with it. Certainly, above and beyond that, we've seen moves to not only through direct Israeli Israeli occupation has sort of sought to contract out to Palestinians through the Oslo process. Contract out policing of Palestinians, that is to say, there have certainly been attempts to also bring sort of regional U.S. client states into the mix, and already you definitely see West Bank-based forces under President Abbas trained by Jordanians, and the period that preceded the Hamas's consolidation of internal control of Gaza in the summer of 2007 was a period in which, from Egypt, U.S.-trained, Egyptian-trained Palestinian forces sort of were fighting a contra war, being sent into Gaza. So exactly how that's going to evolve is unclear. But what we need to be very clear about is that Palestinian rights to political self-representation are not negotiable rights. Those are not rights to be given or taken away. Those are fundamental, inalienable political and human rights. And the idea that Hamas can be excluded from the electoral process because, what, because it attacks civilians? Meanwhile, we see February parliamentary elections in Israel coming up, where by those criteria, essentially none of the major Israeli parties would be able to run. This is not a viable model, and it's simply the case that Palestinian political parties, as they're chosen, not by Israel and not by the West, but by Palestinians, need to be able to govern Palestinian politics. And it's those principles that we need to defend.
Definitely. Thank you so much for coming on today, Dan. We're going to be continuing to follow this situation, the horrific situation in Gaza, and our hearts and our minds are with the people of Gaza right now as they withstand this massacre. Briefly, just before you go, can you tell listeners where to go, who to get in touch with if they want to get involved in the campaign, of course, not only to end the current slaughter in Gaza, but as you said, extend this to build a movement here to bring down the Israeli apartheid state.
Well, you were referring to the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, which is a coalition that does lots of sustained and very solid work on many fronts in Toronto. Their website is kayaweb.org. Above and beyond that, I think what we need to be ensuring is that this isn't something that is confined to Palestine solidarity groupings in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. There has historically been a sort of politics in the mainstream anti-war movement of sort of recurring hesitation to deal with the question of Palestine. I think with what we've seen over the past few years, it's become eminently clear that Israel-Palestine is a major leading front in the international assault we're sort of seeing under the rubric of the war on terror. And those debates need to be a thing of the past, and the question of Palestine needs to be central to anti-war progressive social movements and any civil society groups worth anything at this point, given the situation that we're seeing.
Definitely. Thanks so much for coming on today, Dan.
Thanks.
Bye. That was Dan Freeman Malloy speaking again about the Israeli slaughter taking place in Gaza and the continuing need for international solidarity with Palestinians to affect and essentially interfere and successfully overturn the diplomatic wing of this Israeli assault on Gaza.
And this is CHRY 105.5 Radio Basics. We're going to go to some notices and announcements. We'll be right back.
Return to the B-Girl. Wild style. Rocking it. Ha. Rock, rocking it on. How we do when we hanging on the low ride. Bend on the lips. Honey dripping off the dough ride. Hands touching on the jiffy so we roll. Taking off the bitch that we just spent all night. Black books right. M to the one break. Come snitch when I come to champion. I don't lie. No, you're watching me. Dilly in hand. Just beat like a then that I did, round the world again. Travel with a pad and a pen. These days on the plane, catch a play from a tan. My time again, wait, no time for a man. So, if you wanna roll that act, grown. Don't hate on a woman, those wait on a broken nose. No kiss, first date, only heaven knows. Follow up mistakes to the grave, you can never grow. Kick out that cake, how she eat it too. Never need a break, cat, that's quarter two. Holler around the way, hand, that's bamboo. Struggle with the females, deep, no more bugaboo. Easy, 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 easy. Now you run another pro style extra bit. No stunning for your role, no friends to kid. How I run a bear and solo on some gangsta shit. Ha. If you wanna run around me. Head nod, oh god, read up on the sound. See how the giddy get down, get loud, be done with all these clowns. Yes, men on the hype team. Jet set on the pipe dream, feeling it. Chicks, wet dips, set thugs, dealing R&B. I'm thugs with the love that the industry does. Hoony money, he said, mini, mini money, yo. Fire star, fire burn, fire come and go. Fire in a vein, don't change, let the people know. Damage on the train, change pace, soon slow. Back up in the race, that dame, let the people know. I make it look easy, make it look fresh. Make it look bold, cause I'm one of the best. Make it be gangsta, make it be war. Make it all peace when we bring the bless. Steady be dropping, steady be boxing. Fizzy be Brooklyn, for the bus. Wanna rhyme sayers, wanna be haters. In the hot soul, you know what we are. Easy, 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 easy. I make it look, I make it look good. Easy, 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 easy. I'm just chilling like a dime with a chuckle. Yup, give it some time. Like your dime will be fucked up. Making talk, standing on the wall. Nothing like a man with some ice creams, y'all. Chilling with a tan, got them ice creams on. Ripping in Japan, Montreal, in the fall. So, you and I, T.Y. said peace, queen. She like, don't speak, girl, rip the east mean. I'm like, spell the street. Don't mean I'm easy, girl. I'm the same as dream, beyond the 3T. I'm not the in-between, I got the dab like queen. All my people see, major where you be. 5 feet of bro, come and rock a show. L.O.Q, she know how the biggest blow. East, off. You running off your mouth, that butter up the room chat. He's us. I see you butting on the riff that's bold inside his feet flat. Please, us. I'm just that big girl on the mic check. DJ save my life tracks. Peace, us. I'll hustle to the flow. Black rap, return up the boom back. M1, return up the boom back. B girls, return up the boom back. Get go on the hustle, on time. Rock the show. Get go on the hustle, on time. Rock the show.
That's Meja One from her latest album, Pulau. Disc 2, track 3, Return of the B-Girl. Also available in a bunch of remixes on Return of the B-Girl. So I think we're going to have a little discussion about community media. Steve, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. You know, just reflecting on the two issues that we discussed here today on CHRY Radio Basics. The one being the strike with QP3903 university workers here at York University, contract faculty who perform more than 50% of the teaching tasks here at the university, as well as graduate assistants and teaching assistants. I mean, this issue has been so misconstrued, disinformed, just outright lied about in the mainstream media. And of course, the same thing goes with the situation in Gaza, the bombardment and now the invasion of Gaza. And I was just reflecting on how much more important this makes media outfits like this, CHRY 105.5, which is a campus community radio station, where we can talk about these things over the radio freely. Though, I mean, from what we see going on at CKLN right now down at Ryerson campus, Kabir, I know you can speak to this point. We shouldn't take organizations like this for granted, clearly. Do you want to talk about what's going on at CKLN?
Yeah, no, definitely. We shouldn't take spaces like this for granted, and we shouldn't take, in terms of the little space people have to voice their opinion, to actually have an independent and non-commercial, non-corporate voice. It's been continually under attack and under restrictions. We see this at CKLN, which was really perhaps along with CHRY, one of the last remaining true community places, or true places for the community on Toronto airwaves and in fact all of Toronto media. And so what we've seen at CKLN is the takeover of CKLN by a right-wing corporate board with commercial interests that is moving from an anti-people standpoint, moving away from the community vision of the show and towards more commercials, you know, wanting to advertise for Canadian Tire. And when this right-wing board was completely voted out by the people, by the membership, like by 90% of the 144 people who are the members of CKLN who support that radio station, that's 88.1 FM for people who don't know, this board essentially went on a massive purge of radio hosts and broadcasters at CKLN, and fired some, you know, community members who had been there for over 25 years. These were well-respected members of the community. Mm-hmm. People that had the most popular shows on CKLN were you know, fired without a second thought. And of course, this firing deliberately and specifically targeted minority voices, you know, radical voices on the airwaves, people like Audrey Redmond, you know, residential school survivor, who was broadcasting there called Earth Rhythms, a show called Earth Rhythms on CHRY, was yanked from her microphone as she spoke, you know, about the oppressive actions of the board. And then most recently, of course, I'm sure our listeners must have heard of Norman Otis Richmond. He's been a broadcaster on CKLN for over 25 years, and his show Saturday Morning Live, which really has been the voice of the black community, has been the voice of the people on Toronto airwaves, had some of the best music, you know, in Canada, mm-hmm. on his show, you know, featured struggles from around the world. I was just thinking, you know, had Norman continued to be on, he would be, you know, covering Gaza front and center this week. But unfortunately, just 3 weeks ago, Norman was also fired from CKLN.
And to underscore, this was by a board that's completely illegitimate, that was recalled,
that was voted out impeached by the
general
members.
Membership. Yeah. So this is a board that is completely undemocratic, and yet things are continuing. They're doing what they're doing, and in fact, they've called in the police to reinforce their illegitimate rule.
In fact, demonstrations that have been had at the CKLN office by concerned listeners, by fired radio hosts, locked out radio hosts, the campus police have been called to arrest these people, you know, take these people away. And when the campus police actually refused to respond to any calls from the CKLN board because, you know, they were getting too many calls and, you know, about nothing, they now called the Toronto police into CKLN in order to remove, you know, people from essentially expressing their will. Yeah, so it's definitely horrible what's going on at CKLN. Everyone should remember to financially boycott CKLN. That is, you know, not to give any money to that right wing board, because it will not, you know, serve any purpose except to, you know, further their agenda. But it also gives us the lesson as to we have to really maintain these community spaces we have on radio and on newspaper as well.
And big ups to all the activists at CKLN who are holding it down, sitting through some really frustrating meetings. You know, not all this activism stuff can be the sexy stuff. A lot of it has a legal side, a bureaucratic side, a logistical side, and people have been holding it down at CKLN for many months now, trying to push things forward in meetings, working within Robert's Rules of Order and all kind of these things, right? So, you know, just to let you all know, Radio Basics and all of us up here at CHRY, I think, are with you, and keep up the good work. Let us know what we can do to help out. So we're going to take you to some local music once again. Zaki Ibrahim from her EP late last year. Here we go. Track one, Grow.
See the reason why you're falling back, 'cause you're living right.